You're listening to The Roofer Report, the ultimate podcast for roofing professionals, business owners, and entrepreneurs. Get insider access and hear about the highs, lows, and tales of triumphs from thriving business owners. Brought to you by Roofer, hosted by Pete McKendrick.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Roofer Report. I'm your host, Pete McKendrick, and I am joined today by our September Roofer of the Month, Corey Combs from South Shore Roofing. Welcome, Corey. Excited to have you on. You've been a part of Roofer since the very beginning, and you and I have known each other since long before that. So this is an honor to have you on here and have you as our Roofer of the Month. Our Roofer of the Month series has been great. We've had some really great interviews, and I think this one will be a bit unique because up until this point, the majority of the people that we've had on as Roofer of the Month have been fairly new in their business. Within, I would say, probably the first 2 years of business. So you're probably the most established Roofer of the Month that we've had. So that'll make this a little different talking about your journey, but I'll give you a little quick second here to kind of introduce yourself and talk a little bit about South Shore, and then we'll dive into the story a bit.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe me being the most established, we'll leave that up. we'll leave that up for debate when we're done.
The most senior. Then the most senior. How's that?
Okay, that's a little better. Yeah, man, we've talked a lot. We've known each other for a while. You've kind of watched my journey from opening South Shore to where we are now and the bumps and bruises that have come along with that and my love for the industry. And we all kind of have the same love for the industry. So I can't imagine doing anything else. South Shore's, we've actually had to pivot, and it's interesting that we're going to talk a little bit about the journey, because I think last time we did one of these, it was maybe a year or two ago, and we were in the middle. I mean, we were slammed. We had too much work. We had those growth problems, and now things have changed to where Florida's in a really interesting spot. I got my fourth phone call from another contractor yesterday that they're probably going to go ahead and close up shop because they just don't want to deal with it. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about this journey and what's happening and how things are changing and, you know, kind of my journey and what we're doing to ride the storm, but make it through this season of what's happening in the industry in Florida.
Yeah. I mean, going back, like you said, you and I have known each other since the very beginning, right? I remember onboarding you, and I think you were still a one man show, right? At that point.
That was a one man show. Yeah.
Started. So yeah, it's been awesome to watch you and South Shore grow. And so take us back there, I guess. For you, how did you get into roofing, right? How did you end up in the roofing industry? I don't think anybody wakes up and says, I want to be a roofer when I grow up. So
I definitely did not do that.
So how did you end up here?
I was working at a restaurant, and oddly enough, I just went and had dinner at the restaurant I was working at last week, and I was having dinner with company owner that I'm acquiring at a restaurant that I used to work at. It was pretty fun.
Come full circle there.
But we were working in the restaurant business, and one of the guys that worked for me, or with me rather, came in one day and said, I've got a way that we can make a lot more money. And I said, I'm in. I didn't even ask what it was. And he said, well, it's going to be construction. And I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing. He's like, it's fine. At the time I was making $2.13 an hour. That's what minimum wage was in Florida. And so when I first started, we get out there and the job is shoveling gravel off coal tar pitch built up roofs, shoveling gravel and pulling up that just god awful hot mop and insulation and all that garbage. So that's how I got into the roofing industry. So I went from making like $300 a week to $500 a week. And that was a payday for me, man. So that's how I got into it. And very quickly realized that there were other positions open in the company and I needed to learn how to do those, so I didn't have to shovel the tar and gravel all day anymore. I only did that for about 2 months, man. It was so bad.
In the hottest place on earth, right?
Right. I always thought, like, people, I was like, you think you're hot up there and wherever? I was like, try being a white guy in the middle of July nailing on shingles in Florida. It's pretty hot, man.
Crazy. So at what point did you kind of see an opportunity to say, like, hey, maybe I can do this on my own, right? Like, maybe I can branch out. And, like, what were the indicators there for you? And What made you make that leap?
It's an interesting story. I love this story, and I owe an immense debt of gratitude to this woman that I used to work with. So I started out as a laborer and doing all that stuff. I worked my way up to shingling, and then my family started to do flips. And when they started flipping houses, obviously they brought me along because I was the construction guy, which I didn't know anything. All I knew how to do was roof. But I did that for a long time. I did that for a while, and then I got into project management. So I did a lot of stuff in the industry. And after my last position that I was working in, I was working as a sales rep, and I was doing really well. I was making good money. They left me alone. I had full autonomy. I had freedom. It was great. Like, came and go as it pleased. I had a great relationship with the owner and the sales, everybody. They did everything. They did remodeling. They did roof. I mean, they did everything. And I worked on the larger project side. So I did all the additions and the new construction, all that stuff. And I worked with her. She was the architect that we had on staff. And one day she asked me, she's like, "Why do you work here?" And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" She's like, "You're really good at what you do." She's like, "The industry well, construction." And she's like, "Actually, you can even draw out basic elevations and floor plans. Like, why are you just working in sales? Why don't you go do your own thing?" I'm like, "I don't know." And she just kept on. "Hey, you're in your earning years, you're in your earning years, you're in your earning years." And finally, one day I had an argument with the owner. He did some stuff that was, I felt, pretty unethical. I was their highest producer. And I felt like I'll just tell you what happened. So I sold a big job. The people that were our customers were a huge pain in the ass. And the owner just didn't want to deal with them anymore. So he cut ties with them. And then he backed out all of my commission for the job that I sold. I did my job, yeah. Right? And he backed out. It was a $380,000 job, you know. So my commission was like 30 grand. And he did it in December. So I was living in Buffalo. He did it in December at the slowest time of year. That was going to carry me through the winter, and it really screwed me. So I just said, "You know what? You're right." And I spent the next 6 months planning my exit. So I got my licenses and I studied, I did everything, I set some money aside, and then one day I just said, "Let's go." Yeah, let's do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how long were you on your own? We'll do it as a one-man show.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing everything?
Yeah, I was selling, well, maybe about a year. My first hire was an assistant to kind of help me do all that stuff. Yeah, so I was on my own for about a year.
Until your first hire was an office assistant, someone in-house, like inside.
Yeah, well, my first year doing everything, I did $1.7 million. And I was working all the time. Like, that's all I did was sleep, eat, and work. That was it. Yeah.
Now, did you have, you had crews working for you, or were you using subs, or how were you doing that?
You know, that's another interesting story. So we were flipping houses, and we had this crew that always did our roofs. And I've known them forever. So when I got my license and I started my business, she called me out of the blue and asked if I had any work. And I hadn't talked to her for like 3 or 4 years. Maybe even longer. It was maybe 5 or 6 years. And she just called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, do you have any work?" And I was like, "As a matter of fact, I do." So I brought them on, and we worked together, and we did pretty well the first year. They're still with me, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the biggest challenge that you met in the first year of business? Because obviously we work with a lot of small businesses at Roofer. And one of the things that we talk about quite often is, you know, the failure rate of roofing companies. It's extremely high. Yeah. I think 95% in the first year go out of business, and 98% in the first two. So what do you think were the biggest challenges that you hit early on? Looking back, maybe they're different. Maybe what you thought was a challenge at the time, maybe looking back, there was other stuff.
I was really fortunate, man, because when I jumped in, it was a good time economically, and it was a good time in Florida. And what was even better timing is nobody was really trying to get into the retail game. Everybody was chasing the door knocking in insurance. And so it just happened to line up that I hit the market at the right time in the right way. And so my marketing and my advertising, even though it was awful, I mean, it was so bad, but it caught fire after about 3 months. So the first 3 months when I opened up South Shore, I put a tool belt back on. I had a general contractor friend of mine who I was taking on like smaller job. Like I did a bathroom remodel for him and I did a couple window installs for him. Like I wasn't making enough money. So in between my sales calls and builds, I was actually going out and, you know, knocking projects out, right? For another contractor to make money. You know what I mean? So that wasn't really the biggest challenge. I think the biggest challenge was, is you just don't know what you don't know. You know, even though I had been in the industry and I'd been an installer and I'd worked in project management and all that stuff, I'd never been an owner. And I had never handled the financial side of it. I never had, you know what I mean? I never had to deal with paying vendors and figuring out your cash flow and understanding like, okay, can I afford to pay this person? So I didn't know any of that. And that could have been my biggest challenge. However, I know how to sell. Like I know how to sell and I know how to build. And so like I made enough money and I just worked so much I didn't have time to spend any money. So like, I just got kind of lucky that the financial stuff worked out because I wasn't tracking anything on the financials. Like I wasn't doing my P&Ls. I wasn't tracking my costs. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And so looking back at it, that's the biggest challenge. And that's, I think, why most people go out of business is because of that financial side and understanding business finances and understanding cash flow and understanding all those things that it takes to run a construction company, especially when you run into some payment issues or you have a problem where you have to fix it out of your own cash flow or whatever it is. And knowing if you have the money to do that is such an integral part of what we do. But I was lucky, and I will continue to say that I was lucky because the economy was so good and I had hit the market in such a good way, it was dumb luck that I was making enough money that it wasn't too big of a concern.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because we talk about this quite often internally, like we're working right now on job costing. And being able to keep track of your job costs inside of Roofer. And it kind of leads right into this. You're talking about guys who have come from a background of being either like the incredible sales guy that saw the opportunity to go out and do it on his own, or the guy who is like the master installer and could run any production crew on planet Earth. But neither one of those guys necessarily have the business experience, right? And so when it comes time to actually running their own thing, they start to realize, wow, there's a lot more to this than what I thought, right? And there's the marketing and the financials and all these other managing employees that you don't take into account. Like I remember I ran a landscaping business when I was in my 20s and I bought this small landscaping business from another guy. And same thing, right? Like I inherited like two employees. I hired another one when you've got like equipment that's breaking down and like all of these like expenses and like you never sleep, right? Like you're like laying in bed at night, right, thinking about everything and freaking out.
Yeah, like how am I going to manage this? How am I going to do this?
Payroll this week, you know. Like you said, you're doing side jobs to make sure you can pay your guys and like all this stuff. And you don't realize until you're in it that how much there really is involved in running a business like that.
And I wasn't even very good, you know. So when my wife and I first got together, she would come over to my apartment and she would see all these bills sitting on my counter, right? And she'd be like, are you okay? Like, can you pay your bills? I was like, I have plenty of money, right? And she's like, oh, okay. She's like, sign some checks, give me your checkbook and I'll take care of these, right? but that's just how I was. Like I would have the money and it wasn't something that was, we say a core competency now, but it just wasn't something that I wanted to do I didn't want to deal with it. Yeah. And so I brought that same, you know, dumbass attitude when I started South Shore, right? And I quickly figured out, I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's not how this works at all. Yeah. You know, like we're talking about like a lot. It's not a $55 power bill. Like we're talking about like tens and 20 and 30, hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? So I think that was the other thing. Like I had to adjust really quickly to what it takes to have that responsiveness and be responsible in your business. So I think that was probably the other big challenge for me.
What made you decide to do retail? Because like you said it, and I remember like back when you came on to the platform that I was on back then, I mean, it was all the rage to be an insurance roofer, right? Like I remember people saying like, oh, this is going to eventually the bottom's going to fall out of this and it's a fad. But at the time, everybody wanted to do insurance because it was like the get rich quick way to be a roofer, right? And so what made you look at that and say, I'm going to go do retail instead?
Honestly, if I'm being 100% honest about it, I got into retail because that's what I've known my entire career. Like what happened in the roofing industry was not the norm. I mean, that wasn't, we would do restoration jobs. I remember probably early 2000s, we would, when we were between flips, I would go and work and do work for other companies. And we would do these restoration jobs and we would get these houses, the entire inside of the house paid for. Like we would find these like 4 or 5 mold spots in the house. We'd get a mold expert out there. We'd find all this mold and we would get the entire house remodeled off of like these mold spores, right? That was kind of like what happened in the roofing space. But I watched the insurance companies, how they mitigated that. And then they did the same thing with sinkholes in Florida. So they continue. So these contractors kept exposing, and look, I don't even want to get into the ethical argument. I'm just take what I say with a grain of salt here. Okay. So contractors would figure out a way, let's just say to squeeze the most juice out of their project. Let's just say it that way. Okay. And then the insurance companies figured that out. And they figured out how to mitigate what the contractors were doing. So I watched it happen 2 other times. And so I'm watching what's happening in the roofing industry. I know retail really well because that's what I've done my whole career. And I'm like, you know what? This just doesn't really seem sustainable. I'm not really going to get involved with that. And I didn't. I dipped my toes in it a little bit just because there was so much opportunity there and there were people talking about it. So there was a year, I think in 2020, where we were doing some claims but I just had such a bad experience with it. I'm like, you know what? We're not doing this. It was way more work. It was way more dumb stuff that you had to deal with the insurance company and you had to beg for every penny. Like I'm not doing that. So that's why I stuck with retail.
It's funny. I remember we did a lot of the company that I had in St. Augustine in Northeast Florida, right on the coast, beach town, right? We kind of had the same issue. Like we would do the same thing, right? Like you squeeze everything you can out of a project. And then with the hurricanes, we could get a lot of same thing, mold and flood damage and things like that. And then the insurance companies caught on and then they stopped offering flood insurance to people if they were within a certain distance of the beach and all this stuff. Same idea.
And now you have to buy a separate flood policy with a whole separate, they have separate guidelines on the flood policy. Yeah,
so they, if,
that's what they do, exactly. Man. Yeah.
You expose it and they figure it out. So,
yeah.
I remember back when you first started too, that you were roofing only, right? No other trades. What made you decide to go that route? Because I think talking to some of the other contractors, I know it is very easy to fall prey to, especially early on, right? When you're looking for work, when you're trying to get going and trying to make some money for the company, it's very easy to say like, oh, while we're here, we can fix that too. Or, oh, you've got something wrong with your bathroom. Let me take a look. And next thing you're essentially a GC as opposed to just a roofing contractor.
Yeah. This will actually dovetail really well into what we're doing now and how we're handling the current situation in Florida. So really fortunate that I have a diverse background in construction where I've done a lot of everything. I've done large scale remodels. I've done production building. I've done a lot of different things in the construction industry, and I've done roofing. And so I saw the opportunity and the convenience of just doing roofing, because they're quick turnaround projects. And that's why it's such a popular industry, because there's a lot that can happen, but they're high margin, quick turnaround. And that's the recipe for profitability right there. So that's why we started with that, because the first, so let me back up a little bit. When I was trying to find my way, when I first opened South Shore, because like I said, I was doing some projects on my own where I had done a bath remodel and I'd done some window installs and I did a couple siding installs. I thought to myself, okay, well, maybe we'll have a diverse set of offerings, because the company that I worked for prior to, they did everything. They did remodeling, they did roofing, siding, window, they did everything. And they did fine, but I had my first big project. It was a $38,000 project that we started out. We got into it, built a deck, did a bathroom remodel, found out that was leaking so badly, it rotted out all their subfloor throughout the entire house, got an insurance claim done for them. And this is another reason why I'm not going to do it. I didn't want to do insurance. We got an insurance claim done for them. The job ended up being like $113,000, because we had to rip out all the flooring. We had to do everything, right? The job went flawless, okay? Except their grandson took some of their trim, their cabinet trim that we had pulled off, and decided to take it in the yard and play with it and break it, right? So we go to finish the job. We can't find the trim. We can't find anybody to match it. I told him, look, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And he's like, what do you mean? You're not going to finish the job, yeah. You know? And we fought over this trim that his grandson, not fought, but we had a disagreement over this trim that his grandson broke. I couldn't finish the job. He went out and wrote a 1-star review in a brand new business, said the job went perfect, except they didn't finish. I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing interiors, man, because we were starting to do roofs. Roofs were really profitable. They were easy. They were quicker. And I'm like, you know what? We're just going to focus on that. So we did. And so we just leaned into roofing. It wasn't necessarily intentional, because you're right. I would have fallen victim to like, hey, I know all this stuff. We can do all this stuff. But it just so happened, I got my fingers slammed in the door on that first project. And I'm like, you know what? Let's not do that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about being a GC that I learned is the projects will always take longer than you think they're going to take, right?
And they're going to be more expensive.
Yeah. And your profitability is not going to be what you think it's going to be in the end.
So right.
I understand the reason why people lean heavy into roofing. So I totally get it. Mm-hmm. So as you have grown, what would you say have been the most crucial people that you've added to the staff? Obviously, it's different times. Probably the need for different people has arisen, but what would you say would be like your key people? If I was starting out a new business and I was like, okay, my goal this year is to hire one person, next year is to hire two more, who would you say these are your key hires?
That's a complicated question, Pete, because, well, it's you as an owner, you bring different skills to the company, hopefully. That hopefully you bring some skill set that qualifies you to own that business. Some of it's different for other people. I've seen people that have a really strong finance background come into roofing and do really, really well, because they understand the money part of it. They understand the business part of it, and they figure that they can hire out and get the trades people. And so their key people are going to be the ones that understand and know the trades. Okay. So is an owner, and if you're an owner operator, you're an owner, and your core competency is, let's say you're a skills guy, the install in and out. Well, your first hire, or you're the first person you're going to bring on, is somebody that's going to be completely opposite. So there's no plug and play answer to that. It really depends on what you bring to the table and what you need. For me, the person that helped me the most, I will say, was an assistant that took the things that I didn't, that weren't revenue generating. She took those off my plate, and now I can go and focus on doing things that brought money into the company. And so when somebody asks that question on a generic level, that's what I tell them. whoever can take the things off your plate that are not revenue generating, that will allow whoever's going to generate the revenue to go generate revenue, that's the first person that you need to hire. Because one of two things happen. You bring on somebody that doesn't necessarily take those off your plate. They actually add to it because you have to teach and train and continue to answer questions. And there's a lot of duplication, and they actually don't help you at all. So that's what I would say is, like, think about what you need off your plate that is not revenue generating. That's the key difference. That's the key factor, is the revenue generating. And hire that person and give them those things that are going to free you up for what you need to do to bring into the business. So that was the person that helped me the most. But the most, I would say, the most helpful person that I've brought in terms of, like, that is I've learned the most from, was I brought in a guy. He's a financial planner, but he's not just a financial planner. He helps you. He kind of works as a fractional CFO, sort of, and he helps you figure out, like, your cost to operate, your cost to be profitable, your costs to be able to invest money back into the company. And so all of those things that help me understand my cash flow and all of that stuff, so that when I make decisions in the company, they're based on the financials, because that's how businesses run, not how I feel about something or what I want to happen or any of that stuff. Now we can look at it and we can make data-driven, actual decisions based on what we've identified to be healthy metrics in the business and where we are with that. So that has been the healthiest thing that I've paid for and the healthiest hire that I've made.
What, now you guys saw some pretty significant growth pretty quickly at South Shore.
Mm-hmm.
What would you attribute that to? Just good timing, or, you know, is there something specific that you did from a process standpoint, from, I guess, anything like specifically in the system or in your process that you did that allowed you guys to scale? Because how long, you guys have been in business now, how long?
This is year five.
So you're only in year five. So you're really not, I joked at the beginning and said you were the most senior person, but you're really not that far removed from the other folks that I've talked to that are in their first and second years of business. And you guys have done extremely well. So what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think there's a lot wrapped up in that. And I used to say luck, right? I used to say luck. And I was talking to a friend of ours, actually, John Bros, one day. And I said that to him. I said, I've just gotten really lucky. And he's like, I know you. You didn't get lucky. You know what I mean? You need to stop saying that, right? And I said, okay. But some of it is luck. I will say that. I have a great market. The Tampa area is a great market. I hit it at the right time. It's just growing like crazy. There wasn't a ton of people in the retail space. So when I hit the market, the luck of that was, I had a lot to play. But the other things is, because I've worked for some really good companies and I've been in the construction industry, I mapped out, like, what I wanted this to look like. And I sat down and I wrote out my processes, and I had these living documents that when I needed something, I would actually sit down and I would write these job descriptions out or these responsibilities out. And I just kept building that way. And because I did that, I had an intimate understanding on what I needed next in my business. It's the people that don't, I think it's the people that are always looking to have somebody help them that don't really take the time to identify where they need. Like, Austin Fricker is a really good one. I don't know if you've ever met him or if you've ever talked to him, but if you get a chance to connect with him, he's unbelievable. Same thing. He, like, got in trouble, ended up on some work crew learning roofing, and ended up getting out of prison, started working on a roofing crew, opened up a company, and now he runs a $20 million company in the middle of BFE somewhere. Like, he just owns the area. And he talks about, like, how he just paid attention in his business and did the things in his business. So he knew what he needed and he was able to help with that organic growth. And he'll even tell you now, like, there's a lot of things that on like a high level, he'll look at it and he'll direct traffic, but he'll find the right people because that's not really what he does. And that's the second thing, or the third thing rather, that I think I did well is I partnered with the right people. I found really competent, good people to partner with to help me with the things that I didn't know. Now, the difference is I had an understanding of what I needed and how to go about it, but I was not a professional that could actually execute that on a high level. When people, I hear people say a lot, they're like, oh, I'll just hire the things that I need or whatever. And it's like, that's not how it works either. You have to understand what you need and at least be competent in that thing so that you can bring in the right person that's actually going to help you.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great point because like last year with Rise, like we were traveling and I would ask the question just simply like how many people have written their process down on paper? But in a room of 75 people, I might have 4 or 5 people raise their hand. But it's like you said, like, how do you, if you don't even know what your process is, how are you ever going to be able to identify where your areas of opportunity are, where you could fill a gap by hiring a person or fill a gap with something else, software or something like that? But you're never going to truly, like, you're going to be putting out fires. You're going to be hiring people to put out a fire after reacting to a situation after it's fallen apart, as opposed to being proactive and being able to say like, okay, hey, here's an opportunity that we could probably do better because I know my process. And like you said, you may know that that's a spot that you don't necessarily want to deal with, but you also know enough about it and know that you need to put somebody there to fix that problem. And I think a lot of times we're more traditional, what I've seen anyway with roofers is they're more reactive than proactive, right? Rather than having that process in place, having a system and saying, okay, here's what we can do to make the process better or to sustain us longer or keep us scaling. We wait until it starts to fall apart around us and then we try to hire to save our ass, more or less.
I don't want to give the impression that I'm like some sort of mastermind where I like, you know what I mean? I'm like thinking, it was really like, I don't want to have any problems. Like, okay, so how do I make that happen? That's all it was. It's like, look, man, I don't want to get sued. I don't want to have problems. Like, how do I make that happen? And like, really everything was just built off of like that one premise. Like, how do I minimize problems? That's it. You know,
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny.
And look, we could talk about this for the next 2 hours, man. So I know this is a short version, so I'm just going to stop there.
Well, it's funny. I remember Ty Backer from TC Backer saying every person has a process, even if your process is, let's go figure it the hell out. Like, that's a process. It's not a good one, but it is. So you start from there and then you build. But like you said, if that was the premise, was like, let's just figure this out so we don't have to deal with the issues, right? That's a process. Yeah.
And I just took it from the customer journey standpoint, right? Like, okay, so I got a lead. What happens next? And then just walk through the process. Okay, so then it's sold. Then what happens next? Then what happens next? And that was it. It was just kind of like, what happens next? What happens next? What happens next? And I went on Google Docs and I just started like my map, right? It's like, okay, we have a lead. The lead goes to this. This goes to this. This goes to this. And it just, and then and in between, I just started typing and filling stuff out. And it was, like I said, it was just a living document that I would just work on when I needed to work on something and figure out like what's next.
I think the thing about it is people don't realize how much visibility it gives you into your company when you do that, right? Like that, the first thing we would do, like when I would train people on CRM, is I would literally say exactly that. Lead comes in, what happens next? Tell me what you guys do next.
All right.
Okay. We
schedule it. Then you have a method to walk through.
Yeah, because you're doing something, right? Like, you have some type of method, whether you have it written down or not, you have some sort of a process in place. Let's figure out what it is. And then it was always amazing to me when you put these processes into the CRM and you had this workflow built, how they would then look at it and say,
maybe like,
oh, we don't really need this. Or, oh, geez, we're completely missing a step, right? And it would take people 2 or 3 times of tweaking that workflow to get it ideally how they wanted it, right? So, and if you don't ever write it down on paper, you don't ever realize that there's those opportunities in there. So,
and when it's there, like sometimes you look at it and you just have like these aha moments and you're like, okay, I changed this, I can do this. And it just brings this level of clarity that's so helpful, you know?
It's crazy. When in the process did you decide to implement, and I kind of know the answer to this, but for the viewers, when in the process did you decide to put technology into play in a company? Because you know, like we had a conversation the other day internally about how there's 110,000 roofing companies out there on any given day, and there's probably maybe 20,000 of them using a CRM, right? So you guys did it right from day one.
Day one. Yeah, that was another hindsight benefit that I had. The last company that I worked for, they were a big company and they had this super clunky estimating system and this super clunky CRM. And it was like, we had a full-time guy. His entire job, his name was Doug. We all knew Doug really well because his entire job was to debug what you were working on at the moment. I mean, it was so frustrating, man. So they had the right idea. And then they were also really good at training us and I'm sorry, taking us to trainings. And we went to this training one time and it was inadvertent. It was a design training, actually, as a matter of fact. But the guy that was doing the training inadvertently was talking about like estimating software and CRM. And I was like, let's talk about that. You know what I mean? And so that was like my first like real dive into like some of those different, and the software that was out was terrible at the time, by the way, but it was something that had the right like system and mechanisms in place. So everything flowed the right way. And then I was working in this company and I'm like, this doesn't work. So when I opened my company, I'm like, all right, I know all the problems. Like, let me find some things that actually solve those issues. So it was a good from an experience standpoint of like all of the problems, because now I had a framework to look at stuff and say, okay, I know what the issues are. What is the piece of technology that solves that? Yeah.
Cool. What's currently going on at South Shore, right? We want to talk a little bit about life in Florida right now. And then what does the future hold for South Shore?
Life in Florida is interesting right now, just with the insurance carriers that have left. And we have that whole situation to deal with. We've had some pretty big storms. We've had a lot of people that have decided they can't afford to live there anymore. It's just an interesting situation. And what's happened is some of the bad actors in the restoration industry have left a really bad taste in a lot of people that live there's mouth. And so roofing contractors aren't held in the highest esteem. At the same time, economically, I don't think Florida's doing that great on a personal level, because people are really holding on to their money right now. And so we had last year, people wouldn't even bat an eye. We're $2,000, $3,000 higher than somebody. They wouldn't even bat an eye because they want to pay for quality and they're okay with it. To now, that really matters to people. They're like, look, I really want to use you, but I just don't have the extra $3,000. But I have to replace my roof because of my insurance company. And so it's very challenging in that way. So salesmanship will only take you so far right now. And so what we've had to do is we've had to diversify not only the products that we're offering to try to meet people in that budget crunch, which I don't like doing, but it just is what it is. And then offering other services to fill the gap. And we just did our numbers last month. We're down almost 30% from last year. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And like I said earlier in the call, I've had four other people that say, I'm done. I'm out. You know, we're doing okay. We're doing okay. I'm not.
That speaks to the people who are probably not running a decent process and are a bit seat of the pants that can't float through a time like that.
They can't hide anymore. There's no, people aren't throwing money at you you know, people just aren't throwing money at you anymore. And so, you know, those bad processes or those bad, I don't want to say bad companies, because I truly believe that most people get into it with the best of intentions. I really do. I don't think that there's a lot of people out there that are really have that bad of a moral compass. There can't be that many people.
They're not trying to start a corrupt company, I don't think.
I just think, you know, I just think they get over their head and they don't know how to deal with it and they hide and they get into a hole that they can't dig themselves out of. They bury their head in the sand and then the inevitable happens. Yeah.
So what is for the future of South Shore then? Obviously, hopefully that economy picks up down there, but besides that, like, what does the future for South Shore look like?
We're still going to do over 8 figures. So I'm my earlier comment with a grain of salt. I mean, it's so what's next is just going to keep trying to improve and trying to improve our internal processes and get better and better and better at what we do. And I give you a good example. Like we've started picking up a lot of other work, windows and siding and all of that stuff, which, by the way, windows are quick turnaround and high profit too.
Yeah.
So the profitability is almost as good as roofing. So we really leaned into that. If you have the right partner, you know how to do it, you can do it efficiently, you can make some money there. So we're going to continue to lean into that and get better at providing those services. But the story I wanted to tell you is because my team is relatively newer to those types of projects. We had a $100,000 window job that we're doing in a $25 million house. And my production manager is telling me that my installer doesn't want to do the job. And I'm like, okay. So I call my installer and I say, hey man, what's the problem? And he's like, I didn't say I don't want to do the job. He said, I can't do the job because I don't know what to do, right? Like, he needed more information, but the language barrier and all that stuff, you know. And so I got everybody on a phone call and I said, look, guys, here's what we're going to do. Everybody's going to meet at the site. We're going to talk about the job. We're going to talk about how it was sold. We're going to talk about the challenges. We're going to come up with a game plan for literally everything. We're going to label all the windows. We're going to label all the openings. We're going to make it dummy proof, right? And I just talked to everybody this morning. We had our meeting. They had their meeting. I talked to everybody this morning. I said, how did it go? And they're like, oh my God, it was amazing. Like, we got everything worked out. Everybody knows exactly what's going on, this, that, and the other. And I was like, weird, right? Let's do that from now on for all of these other projects. And so that's what I mean by just trying to get better at our processes and what we do, because things seem to be different a lot of times, but they're not. You just apply the same logic and process to everything that you do, and it typically works out. So I'm trying to train my team on thinking through that, and not when our installer says, I can't do the job or I don't want to do the job, like asking the next question and trying to work through that instead of saying, well, I don't have an installer now. So that's what's next for us. And I'm acquiring another company. So we're just going to try to do really, really high end, good contracting in Tampa. So that's what's next for us.
Cool. To carve out a nice little niche there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to keep you too long, Corey. And so congratulations on being the Roofer of the Month for September for Roofer, and honored to have you. You've been a friend of mine for years and I've been able to watch you guys grow, and that's been incredible. I know a lot of people can probably say that. So it's been cool to watch you guys mature as a company and see you find success and us be friends through all that. So very cool.
You've been a big part of it, man. I mean, We're currently on a text thread. Now it's more just talking trash, but but you know, even early on, it was just talking to you and getting your perspective from other contractors and what you dealt with on the CRM side, and then going over to Roofer and kind of the things that you see globally, you know, that are just issues across the industry. Knowing those things and talking to people like you has been extremely helpful, because I get to learn the challenges that everybody's facing and kind of look at it from a different standpoint. And we're doing some teaching and some coaching now. And that one of the parts of that is helping people understand the relationships in the industry too, because that's not talked about enough. Yeah. And what those relationships need to be and how you need to work at those relationships, because you guys are super valuable, man. You're not just a technology vendor.
It's funny. I often tell people that the most undervalued people in this are people like our customer success or our customer support people internally, because their job,
they have the data.
Their job literally all day is to talk to contractors. They see hundreds and hundreds of different contractors' businesses and how they're run, and they're getting a look under the hood every time. So they're seeing successes, they're seeing failures, they're seeing people that are creative in the way they do things and different markets. I mean, you name it, they've got access to all of it, and they're probably people don't leverage them enough. Like if you're on a CRM or you're on a any kind of technology platform, those people that are supporting you are just like an endless supply of information by default. I mean, even if they didn't come from a roofing or a construction background, they've learned so much in a short time just from the conversations that they have, that they become just an incredible wealth of knowledge. So people don't take enough advantage of them, I think.
Well, that's what you guys are doing really right, because you're not only are you talking to them, you're getting the perspective from them and the people that they're dealing with, but you're also going out to your users and you're asking what's useful, what's not useful, what challenges are faced. And then you guys up at in the management area, you have the benefit of speaking to sort of all of those people, and you can aggregate that data and the feedback and all of that stuff. And you're right. People do not use their vendors enough, and that's their material. So, you know, their supply vendors.
Every one of those guys.
That's their product reps. It's crazy. Like, you know, I'll get these roofing contractors. They'll call me and they'll be like, "Hey, man, how would you solve this?" And I was like, first of all, did you talk to your product rep?" And they're like, "What?" Like, dude, you need to call the product rep. Like, that's what they do. That's what they're there for. You know, I can tell you what I would do, but it might not be the same as what you need to do up in your market. You know what I mean? It's just, but people don't, they don't do that. They don't call their reps. And it's like, wait, why use them? Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. Take advantage of them. That's what they're there for. They want you to take advantage of them.
That's what they're there for. Yeah. So I appreciate this, Pete, man. I appreciate you as always. Always a great conversation.
Yeah,
man.
This is awesome, man. I really appreciate you jumping on, and congrats on being Roofer of the Month, and good luck in the future with South Shore. I know you got some big stuff going on, so excited to see you guys continue to grow, and I'm sure I'll see you soon at one of the roofing conferences.
Well, I'm working on some stuff with you guys too.
That's
so
true too. So yeah.
Yeah.
You got a lot of stuff going on. So.
Yeah. You got a lot of stuff cooking, baby. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. All right, man. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on the Roofer Report, and we will see you next time.
See ya.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. Check us out next time on the Roofer Podcast. But until then, be sure to like us, subscribe to us, and check out all our other episodes on YouTube and Spotify.